Good morning, board members, Lahontan staff, and the public. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board. My name is Jeff Lux, and I'm the chair. I'm from Truckee. Today's board meeting is being conducted in person from Apple Valley and via Zoom. AGP Video is hosting our board meeting, and thank you very much for doing so. At this time, I'd like to introduce the other members of the regional board here today. To my left, Rick Deaver from Crestline.
Good morning.
Kimberly Cox from Hellendale.
Good morning.
And Robert Pierce from Bishop.
Good morning.
Thank you. We have a quorum physically present in Apple Valley for today's meeting. And welcome, everyone. Thanks for coming. Look forward to a good meeting. Our executive board staff are here today in Apple Valley, including our executive officer, Ben Letton, assistant executive officer, Jan Zimmerman, legal counsel, Elizabeth Barrett, and our board clerk, Ariel LaFarga. We will also be joined by other staff members for individual agenda items. For those who are present and wish to speak on an agenda item, please fill out the orange card, looks like this, in the back, and hand that card to Ariel LaFarga. We've got a few, go ahead and do that, please. In addition, we're receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to present or comment via Zoom, you should have submitted a virtual speaker card to our board clerk, Ariel LaFarga, and be in the Zoom meeting room already. If you think you might be interested in commenting via Zoom, please contact our board clerk promptly at ariel.lafarga@waterboards.ca.gov. That's ariel.lafarga@waterboards.ca.gov. For those joining us via Zoom, your camera will be turned off and you'll be muted until it is your turn to speak. When you're done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you'll be placed on mute again. This meeting is being webcast and recorded, so please speak clearly. And with that introductory kind of remarks, we're going to move to our first item. This is item 9. We had a meeting yesterday, so it's a carryover numbers. It's public forum. This is any person that may address the water board regarding a matter within the water board's jurisdiction that is not related to an item on this meeting agenda or currently pending before the water board. Do we have any speaker cards or any Zoom requests on this one, Ariel?
We do not.
Okay. Seeing no one out there looking anxious to come up, we will close that one, public forum, and move on to item 10, reports by Water Board. We did these yesterday. These are Water Board members already provided updates, so we may not have additional ones, but I'll look both directions, and I'm seeing some head shakes. Rick? No. And none for me as well. We did that as part of our meeting yesterday. All right, on to item 11. Former Hinckley Dairy Cleanup and Abatement Order Informational Update. This item has got a number of speakers. I'm going to describe to you kind of the process of how we're going to proceed, and then we'll continue on with it. First, we're going to get a staff presentation, and then there may be several staff members involved in that. At that point, I'm going to look for clarifying questions and data questions, analytical questions from the board, just to make sure while we've got our staff member up there, we listen to that. Then we will invite those who have been granted additional time, because this is an item that has gone on in the past, and we've got 10 minutes for the representation from the dairy, 10 minutes from one of the residents involved, 10 minutes from another resident, and after that, if we have additional speakers, we will probably move down to 3 minutes, so we're giving 10 minutes extra time for those three speakers to kind of set the context and make sure we understand exactly what we're doing. So that's how we're going to do it. And what I'd like to do is invite staff to come on up and give us the presentation, and then we'll fire some questions at you and see where we are. John, I think that's you.
Good morning, Chairman Lux, members of the board,
and members of the public. My name is John Morales, and I'm a water resources control engineer in your Victorville office. During public forum at the February 2026 Lahontan board meeting, several residents expressed concern about the status of the Hinckley Dairy Cleanup and Abatement Order, or the CAO, and the replacement water that they have been receiving. Today, I will be providing an overview of the CAO for the former Hinckley Dairy. Please note that this is an informational item. It is an opportunity for the dairymen, consultants, and the residents to express their concerns and wishes to you in a more ample forum. The board will not be asked to take a formal action. However, they may provide direction to staff. Next slide. The overview of my presentation will consist of the following points: an overview and background information of the Hinckley Dairy, some history of the CAO issued to the Hinckley Dairy, how the dairy has complied with the requirements of the CAO. I will discuss trends of nitrate and total dissolved solids, or TDS, of some of the residential wells within the vicinity of the former Hinckley Dairy. Finally, I will briefly discuss where we are now and possible strategies moving forward. Next slide. This slide shows a bird's eye view of the former Hinckley Dairy, owned and operated by Mr. Dale Rouge and Mr. Ken DeVries. The former Hinckley Dairy consisted of 135 acres, where approximately 1,000 cows were milked twice a day. The dairy was built and began its operations in the winter of 1980 as Hinckley Valley Dairy. Hinckley Dairy bought the operation in January of 1993, and the dairy continued operations under the new name. The dairy continued operations until the summer of 2022, when all of the cows were removed. The slide also shows the approximate locations of residential wells that have been routinely sampled since the CAO was adopted. Next slide. This slide provides a more zoomed out look at the former Hinckley Dairy and surrounding area. This aerial photograph shows the key surrounding features, including Community Boulevard and Linwood Road, the location of Hinckley Dairy Pivot, Green Valley Farms, and the Mojave River. Next slide. In February and March of 2010, Water Board staff collected groundwater samples from domestic supply wells surrounding the Hinckley Dairy. Those 2010 results showed elevated TDS and nitrate results, and in November of 2010, the Water Board issued an investigative order to the Hinckley Dairy to conduct additional residential well sampling for nitrate and TDS. Then, in August of 2011, the Water Board issued a CAO requiring the dairy to routinely sample residential wells and to provide uninterrupted replacement water to residents whose well showed an exceedance in nitrate and or TDS above a threshold established in the CAO. In September of 2011, the Hinckley Dairy began providing uninterrupted bottled water service to nearby residences impacted by nitrate and TDS above the CAO thresholds for drinking and cooking. In January of 2012, the Water Board issued an amendment to the CAO, reducing the threshold requirements to provide replacement water for nitrate and changing the residential well sampling frequency from quarterly to once every 9 months. Next slide. The former Hinckley Dairy has provided replacement water since the CAO adoption and provided required monitoring reports. The dairy ceased dairy operation in the summer of 2022 and completed manure removal and decommissioned some infrastructure by the summer of 2024. The dairy has sampled residential wells post-dairy operations. Residential well sampling shows that nitrate and TDS levels are stable and in some wells are decreasing since the dairy ceased operations. Next slide. This slide shows nitrate and TDS groundwater concentrations in residential wells within the vicinity of the former Hinckley Dairy during sampling events in the summer of 2021, again in the spring of 2025, and just recently in the winter of 2026. As shown in the table, the nitrate and TDS concentrations over the last several years and since dairy closure have decreased or remained relatively stable in some of the wells, but are still above the maximum contaminant level, or MCL, of 10 milligrams per liter for nitrate and 500 milligrams per liter for TDS in several wells surrounding the dairy. Next slide. This slide shows a timeline of the actions that Water Board staff have taken over the last several years to look into a more sustainable long-term replacement water options for the residents affected by the Hinckley Dairy discharges. In April 2024, at the regularly scheduled board meeting, residents expressed concerns over replacement water and the length of time the CAO has been in place. In September of 2024, staff met with State Board and SAFER to discuss replacement water options and funding opportunities. In October of 2024, staff met with residents to ask them their preferences on a long-term replacement water solution. In January of 2025, staff met with Hinckley Dairy to discuss the residents' concerns and options for a more sustainable long-term replacement water for the affected residents. Staff asked the dairy to think about the options and come back to us with a recommendation. In April of 2025, we met again with the dairy. Unfortunately, the negotiations for the sustainable long-term replacement water stalled when the dairy requested assurance that the CAO would be rescinded. Then in October of 2025, we informed the residents that negotiations with dairy had stalled, but our efforts didn't end there. Next slide. In October of 2025, staff met with the residents again, expressing that we will be continuing with our dairy strategy regarding issuing waste discharge requirements, or WDRs, to all confined animal facilities, or CAFs, in our region. And we would also be looking at other sources of nitrate and TDS in the area. Then in February of 2026, at the regularly scheduled board meeting, residents again expressed concern over replacement water and the stalled negotiations within the dairy. In March of 2026, staff met with Golden State Water Company to discuss service connection requirements and extending the existing water line that was newly installed near the intersection of Community Boulevard and Lenwood Road. Just last week or so, in May 2026, staff met with SAFER again to discuss the feasibility and funding options for wellhead treatment and other point-of-use systems, and also for connection to Golden State Water Company. Overall, staff has maintained a close connection with the affected residents and has provided regular updates to them. Next slide. In April of 2025, the former Hinckley Dairy requested that the board temporarily reduce the monitoring frequency in the CAO from once every 9 months to once every 3 years, while the dairy commits to providing uninterrupted bottled water service. Staff will continue to have internal discussions on possibly amending the existing CAO to reduce the monitoring frequency in the CAO. Staff will also continue implementing the current confined animal facility strategy by issuing individual WDRs to all confined animal facilities in Region 6. Issuing WDRs to dairies that include stricter best management practices and requiring a nutrient management plan will help reduce nitrate and TDS at the source, resulting in improved groundwater quality over time. We adopted WDRs for the Desert Oasis Dairy last year, and we intend to propose the WDRs for Dutch Dairy to the board for consideration at the August board meeting. We are also working on identifying other potential sources of nitrate and TDS in the area surrounding the Hinckley Dairy. This area has a long agricultural history, and there are other dairies and calf facilities nearby. We will also continue to explore options for sustainable long-term replacement water, which I will get into in more details in the next slide. Next slide, please. Now that you heard some of the background on the cleanup and abatement order, here are some possible strategies for replacement water that staff have put together. This list is not comprehensive. Option one, continue with bottled water under the current CAO. Option two, evaluate forms of replacement water other than bottled water, for example, wellhead treatment or point-of-use filtration options. Option three, evaluate water service from Golden State Water Company. The service would need to be extended to the residents in Hinckley, since this area is not currently a part of the service area of Golden State. Residents could retain usage of private supply wells with a backflow prevention device, but further consultation with the water company and county may be necessary to make residents aware of all conditions. This is an informational item, so no action will be taken by the board at this meeting. But we would appreciate any input you may have on these options. Next slide. Thank you for your attention. This concludes my presentation, and I will now turn it over to Board Chair Lux.
Thank you. Are there other staff presentations, or will that be the only one? That's it. Okay, let me start with clarifying questions, data questions, information questions from board members. Board Member Cox.
Thank you, Chair. Can we go to slide 4, please? So what is the call out Green Valley Farms? That looks like some sort of a fenced area there. What is that operation?
Green Valley Farms is not a dairy. Nevertheless, there are animals in that facility. It's like a stockyard of animals.
How many? And what age are the animals? Is it a calving operation? Is it a heifer operation? What is it?
This is Reggie. I believe it's a heifer ranch where they house the cows that are not grown yet, like the baby cows.
Do you know how many head?
Not on top of my head. I can look it up for you.
Okay. And looking at this, my understanding of the groundwater flow is that it goes to the north from the river. So have we evaluated Green Valley Farms as a potential contributor to the nitrate and TDS?
Board Member Cox, Alonzo Poach, Supervising Engineer Geologist. We're in the process of evaluating that as a potential source. We've had conversations with the owner of that operation, and we've also don't understand the groundwater flow directly in this area. We have had staff look at available monitoring wells and other wells in the area and calculate a regional flow, but in the immediate vicinity, we don't understand the groundwater flow completely.
Okay. It's just looking at the picture with all the staining on the ground. That operation has been there for a while. So, okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Board Member Pierce, no questions. Board Member Deaver?
No questions.
Just have one, and it could be for any of the three microphones that are lit there in front of me, you guys. What's been, I know we don't have a lot of monitoring data, but what's been the trend, if you can see a trend in either nitrates or TDS? I mean, after the cows are removed, you know, changing, better, worse, nothing, can't tell?
In some of the residential wells, for the most part, as my presentation stated, it has been stable. In some of them, it has decreased in nitrate and TDS, but nevertheless, and they are concentrations that do exceed the maximum contaminant level, better known as MCL, for nitrate being 10, and for TDS 500 milligrams per liter.
Thank you. And one last one. I know we haven't yet explored, you've got your slide, we don't need to go to it, but the possible replacement water you talk about, wellhead filtration, you talk about hooking up to Golden State. And I know we haven't done we or others have done a deep exploration. Do we have a general sense of the costs and or timing of those two things? I mean, we may get to a point where we're trying to give direction, but we don't have some of the data. Costs or timing, just very, very generally of if the wellhead system versus the Golden State water.
The Golden State water, and as we briefed there, we've had discussions with Golden State. We've had discussions with DDW and the SAFER program. We don't know the exact terminus, but there has to be basically a feasibility analysis done for the connection of Golden State, and that would kind of come up with costs for conceptual costs for wellhead treatment, point of use treatment, or extending the pipeline in various ways. So a smaller diameter pipeline would be the cheapest that these folks could use just for their homes. Larger diameter pipeline if there's more connections. So there has to be a more thorough alternative analysis in all this. So we don't have solid cost on those things. I've heard, what was the estimate, John? It was like $50,000 for some of these wellhead treatment.
Okay. Thanks. I understand that, you know, the lots of information would still need to become. Okay. Thank you so much. That's all I have. Any others up here? Yeah.
I'm sorry. Board Member Cox. I did have another question. Can you remind me, is TDS or total dissolved solids, is that an MCL or an SMCL?
SMCL, secondary.
SMCL, okay, so it's a secondary, not related to health. It's mainly aesthetic,
taste,
odor, appearance.
That is correct.
What is the background of TDS in that area?
It has been relatively high. I don't have specific values for it as far as background, but they have been in certain areas, certain patches of the area, they have been above the MCL.
Because I know when we did the background study for, you know, the other contaminants in the area, we were surprised at what was occurring naturally. So thank you. That's all.
Thank you very much, staff. Appreciate it. And we will move on now to a public discussion on this one. I've got three speaker cards. One, as I understand, is Zoom. Two are in person. Are there other speaker cards, Ariel? I'm just trying to gauge timing. And
no, we just have the two public comment speakers and the Zoom platform. She will only be called upon if she needs to be.
Okay. So my first speaker is from the former Hinckley Dairy, Tracy Egoscu, I believe, and I apologize if I'm going to mess everybody's name up. I'll do my best. And for the first three speakers, the two residents and the dairy, you've got 10 minutes.
Sorry, Board, but Tracy is on Zoom, but I'm the speaker, a representative of the Hinckley Dairy.
What's your name?
Name is Ken DeVries.
Oh, you're Ken. Okay, thank you, Ken.
Tell me when I can start.
You may start.
Oh, thank you, sir.
AGP, can you bring up the second presentation, please? Thank you.
Good morning, Board. We really appreciate us at Hinckley Dairy having the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Ken DeVries. I'm a managing partner of the Hinckley Dairy. And my wife and I have lived on that farm, raised our three children there. I have a son and his wife live on the farm. They have three children, so I have grandchildren on that farm too. You know, we at Hinckley Dairy value the water quality very much because we use it also, and we live there, and we plan on living there for a very long time. Because of that, I'd like to give you a short presentation of our manure management practices, and then I'll move on from there. We milk our cows twice a day. When they come in, they need to be washed. That wash water falls onto a cement slab, then drains down to a PVC pipe to the south of the dairy into a cement collection pit. That pit is emptied daily. It's agitated to get the solids up in the water, and it's pumped up and over a manure separator. That separator then separates the solids from the liquid. The solids fall onto a cement slab and is stored there as it dewaters. That slab then is contoured to where the water coming off that manure goes right back into the pit. The water then falls and is pumped through a PVC pipe, and we have that throughout our farmland that covers 99.5 acres of farmland. Part of the irrigation systems on that farmland are pivots. We have installed a separate PVC line on each pivot, and between each tower, we have a big gun that shoots out the wash water onto alfalfa plants. And we keep this water separate from our irrigation water at all times. We also have fields where they don't have pivots, and they are irrigated by wheel lines, and in those fields we have an automatic big gun sprinkler where it sprays the wash water. That big gun is pulled in automatically, so we have an even spread of wash water going onto alfalfa plants. The solid manure from the separator slab and all of the corrals are exported. The former Hinckley Dairy, we have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars implementing that system so as we can take care of not polluting our groundwater. We also have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in shipping off our manure off-site. Next slide. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I supposed to give commands on slides?
Yes, you may.
All right. Well, that's what I just talked about. So next slide, please. Our dairy nutrient management, well, that's easier. Our irrigated fields at Hinckley Dairy were designed by an engineer using an approved nutrient management plan. And that's our first page of it right there. Next slide, please. All right, I wanted to talk about why Hinckley Dairy puts our wash water onto alfalfa plants. And I found this really concentrated couple of paragraphs done by these state universities, their crop and soil sciences, and I'd like to just read them. Bullet point number one, growing alfalfa removes large quantities of nutrients from soil. In fact, high-yielding stands of alfalfa hay removes as much or more nutrients than any other intensive forage managed for hay or silage. Alfalfa is deep-rooted and drought-tolerant, making it well-suited for nitrogen uptake. The crop is commonly used to dispose of waste nitrogen from a variety of industries. At 50 to 70 pounds per ton of hay, alfalfa removes more nitrogen than almost any other crop. When nitrogen is supplied via wastewater or manure, alfalfa preferentially absorbs nitrogen from the soil rather than fixing it from the atmosphere. And we take advantage of that at the farm. We grow that alfalfa, we harvest it for hay, and we feed it back to our cows, and around it goes, and around it goes. Next slide, please. Our dairy compliance with the CAO, as you know, we have a cleanup and abatement order number R6V-2011-0059-A1. We have done well sampling a total of 19 times over the past 14 years. We have replacement water that has been continuously provided at the locations of wells number 1, number 2A, number 2, and number 3. And as you know, dairy operations ceased as of February 28, 2022. Next slide, please. I wanted to bring a couple of studies up about other sources of nitrate. There is a study conducted by UC Davis in 2002, and they took a group of dairies in Northern California, and they measured the shallow groundwater nitrate. And they averaged about 64 milligrams a liter. Right now, the Hinckley Dairy, with its wells around the dairy, are averaging 6.05 milligrams. There is another review by LRWQCB in 2014 where they took random water samples in the larger Hinckley area. And they found concentrations as high as 10 to 32 milligrams. Then these locations were not near any of the dairies. And so the bottom sentence says the somewhat random pattern of higher nitrate results detected in the regional samples implies numerous localized sources of nitrates, most likely individual septic systems. Next slide, please. Other sources of nitrate. There's an abundant manure stockpiling slash disposal on and immediately adjoining the upgradient Horta stockyard. Same, you guys use the name Green Valley. Presumed groundwater flow direction of north to northwest indicate the Horta stockyard is more likely a source than the former dairy of the affected wells. Second point is the septic system's known source of nitrate on individual properties near the former dairy are in much closer proximity to the domestic wells than the former dairy. And third point, both drone images and ground level observations show animal boarding adjoining well number two, as well as abundant stockpiled manure on the same property. These sources are in much closer proximity to the domestic wells than the former dairy. Next slide, please. All right, now we have a drone image from the south looking north-northwest. In the middle, you can see the Horta Stockyard. To the top left is the Hinckley Dairy and its farm fields. To the top right is the affected wells somewhere in that cluster of trees. But we just want to point out that on the lower end of that picture, south of the Horta Stockyard, is piled manure. And some of it is light-colored. It's been there a while. Sand has blown into it and can hardly be seen. So gives you a bird's-eye view of some other possible nitrate sources. Next slide, please. We have had recent discussions with board staff. The former dairy met with regional staff on August 13, 2025, and on September 9, 2025, an email from Executive Officer Ben Letton indicating agreement to amend the CAO to reduce sampling while replacement water was continued. And this gave us a path forward while other sources of nitrate could be addressed. Next slide, please. You're asking for some historical tests. These are all the wells Hinckley Dairy has been testing with its historical test results. This slide is on TDS. Next slide. This slide is on nitrates. And they're too small for me to read, but if you want some background information on test results, there they are. Next slide, please. Path forward. Although not required by the CAO, we at Hinckley Dairy are willing to provide whole house water filtration systems at the wellheads from Life Source water systems. Life Source is a possibility. We're looking at other manufacturers too. We just want to make sure we get the right company to do a good job. Hinckley Dairy is willing to provide the first 5 years of maintenance on these systems. And we are requesting an amended CAO with reduction in sampling. We are requesting an end date to the CAO after installation of whole house systems. And we are requesting that the Horta Stockyard be permitted by the regional board. Next slide, please. And that's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. All right. I think we will go on and finish the speakers, and if we need you to come back, Ken, or we need to hear from Tracy, we'll do that during our questions and discussion.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much. All right. The next speaker I have, and I believe this is one of the residents who has 10 minutes, is Lauren Pitts. And again, I'm going to can't quite read the handwriting, but Lauren, come on up. Yeah, I can't read my own writing, so that doesn't help.
Excuse me, I'm short. Hi, my name is Lauren Pitts. I live at 24553 Community Boulevard. I'm the closest house, I would say, probably to the Hinckley Dairy. Am I correct, Ken? I'm probably the closest? Okay. So the issues that we have is the high nitrates. That screen that he showed up with the with the geo tracking, I have that here. I can read it off to you guys. All those are very, very high every year. When I first moved in there, my nitrates were at 75. My TDS was at about 800. And it's varied between that up and down probably the whole time I've lived there, 11 years now. John just did sampling back in February. Am I correct, John? And we're still at about 16. TDS is about 64, or I'm sorry, 640. Since Ken and them have shut down, I will not lie, it has gone down a little bit. It's still an issue, I do have issues about the water treatment systems and the water that John and them have been looking into with Golden State. The issue with Golden State is I live in my house. I have a $50,000 solar system set up so that I don't have to rely on solar or electricity. I don't have to rely on the water. I'm working on trying to get away from the gas also. I don't want a $600 a month water bill. That's why I live where I'm at. That's why I have water rights. I also, on the water systems, I have done some research like Ken and them also. Most of these water systems that everybody's looking at is like an RO system. We're not fixing the water treatment problem because now we're dumping the excess back into the groundwater. I think if you guys want that and Ken and them want that, we all need to sit down and look at a different style of a water treatment system, not an RO system, not something that uses water, uses water for backwash or salt. To me, we're not defeating the issue. We're just contaminating the ground with salt and putting the nitrates back in the water. I understand what Ken and them are trying to do. I really do. Me and Brent have asked about water treatment systems from day one, and I get it. They're expensive. I really do. My other thing that I have is, you know, we have been going through this for 11 years. I really didn't know everything that I know now. The more time I get, the more learning I learn. Brent's been going through this for 15 years. I think it's time that we all sit down as grown adults in a room and figure this out. It's stupid. Ken and them, they're wasting money. To me, I would fork out the money and say, here's your treatment systems. And I understand, Ken, that they don't want to release you from the CAO. I get that. I'm at that point of I'm over this water fight. It's stupid. It really is. I don't see why we can't all sit down and figure this out and get it taken care of. It's Lahontan's responsibility to hold them for what's polluted under the ground, if it is them and all the other stuff. And it is ridiculous that we have to come here every time and beg to get you guys, the board members, the staff, to do something. Oh, that's what we come here every time. And like I said in February, if I have to go to every board meeting all over the state and complain about it, that's what I'm going to start doing. I look at you guys. You guys are supposed to be the people to come to and say what we have to say, and you guys are supposed to say, okay, let's fix this. Let's figure it out. To me, Jan knows that we've been going through this for a long time. I'm over it. I really am. I'm being nice today. I mean, the other day I was really hot. I want to be good neighbors, you know, but I'm looking at you guys to please do something. I don't want to be hooked up to Golden State Water. First of all, I can't afford their water bills. I have a rental house in Barstow, and my water bill is about $300 and some, and it goes up more and more every year. I don't want that. I pay for my solar. I pay for my electricity. That's my privilege of living out there. And I'm not going to lie. I miss the cows. I was raised on a farm. I miss them. I miss going out at 2 o'clock in the morning and listening to them and everything else. And for Hector Herder, so that is a beef lot. It is not a calving. They are full-grown cattle. And he has a lot. I am going to tell you probably, I'm going to assume, probably over 500. If you go there and look, they are standing room only. As a farm person, that's just rough. It's hard. I'm glad that John and them have gone out. I'm glad Ken brought up the issue with the manure that's behind him. That's right down in the watershed. So that's almost in the river bottom. Like I said, we come to you to ask you guys to help us. I'm not trying to bankrupt the Hinckley Dairy or anything like that. I just want clean water. I just want clean water. That's all I want. It's bad enough my grandkids don't even come over and go swimming in my pool because they're worried about contaminated water. That's the other thing that is a bad thing for me is to keep my pool full, I either have to haul in water from my other house or get it trucked in or whatever, because the nitrates in the pool, as you guys know, whenever the water gets hotter, the more condensed it gets, the more water you add to it, the more nitrates you're adding into it, and the nitrates eat the chlorine. When I first moved in that house, I couldn't figure out why I was spending almost $4,000 a summer for chlorine. I did some, like I said, the more time you guys have given me to, I figured it out. So I've never asked anybody to reimburse me for all that stuff, any of that, because that's mine. You know, I'll own that part. I've asked numerous times, and we're here. Hopefully this is the last time. Hopefully we all can come to a conclusion, get this straight, get it done, get it over with. I'm hoping you guys will do something. So that's my time. I have some documents if you guys want to see them on the water, all my stuff, my water, and it changes. And I was under the assumption of the reason that we change from so many times a year to every 9 months is that they changed the MCL to 8. Am I correct on that, John?
Yes.
Okay. So, because I keep hearing 10. I was told it was 8. So I want to be clear on that so that I understand where we're supposed to be at. So that's all I have to say. All I hope is, you know, like I said, is you guys can give us some direction, give us, you know, what we need to do, and let's get it done. I mean, it's ridiculous. I think in the long run, Ken and Dale, if we do water treatment systems, it actually will save you guys in the long run a lot of money, other than fighting this all the time. And I want to be friends with my neighbors. I'm good. I talk to Ken, you know, all the time. I'm not out to gouge nobody. I just want good, clean water, and, you know. So that's it. Thank you guys very much for listening to me, and have a good day.
Thank you, Lauren. All right, our next speaker is Brent Kerfuth.
Could I provide a little clarifying quote? Lauren, the 10 is the maximum contaminant level for nitrate, but the replacement water stipulation in the CAO is 8. So the level that we require replacement water is actually lower than the MCL.
Correct, but I thought that it had to be brought down to 8. Am I correct on that?
That's what the CAO specifies.
All right, let's get back to our we can deal with this in the conversation. Yeah, just because you're not on speaker and all this being recorded, I'm going to make sure everything is out there and clear and out in the public. Brent, go ahead.
My name is Brent Querforth. Been in Hinckley since 2001. I have 4 parcels on Community Boulevard, and I feel at a complete disadvantage that I'm not prepared like John Morales with the board and cue cards and Ken DeVries and Hinckley Dairy. And listening to John Morales and Ken DeVries' speech here and their viewpoints, that sounds good to anyone who doesn't know what's been going on for 15 years behind the scenes. And I feel like I'm in divorce court. And it's not humanly possible in 10 minutes to get out what's been going on behind the scenes, that information's been kept from me, the lies I've been told by the government, and following their lead and trusting them and being misled. And the point just that we were interrupted, was it imperative that a deal was made with Hinckley Dairy to go from 3 months water testing, well testing, to 9 months, but there were, the give and take was you're going to go to 8 parts per million, and no one but me is talking about 8 parts per million. You're the first person that's talked about 8 parts per million, other than myself. Everyone else is deaf, dumb, and blind to the subject. And Hinckley Dairy has benefited from testing every 9 months, and I don't get this. I'm interpreting this. Where the heck is it? God bless it. I'm totally out of my comfort zone, and I'm here strictly out of duress. We should not be here. Over 15 years, and I've been in front of this board 3 times in the past 3 years, and the last time I was here 2 months ago or 3 months ago in front of you, I got the impression you had no clue what was going on. And Lauren Pitts and myself have spelled out enough to give you clues, and that's very discouraging. But there's too much to go into right now. John Morales gave a nice speech, but that's all the neat stuff. It's like divorce court. Nobody's talking about all the bad stuff that balances thing out. And Ken DeVries has me pegged as the bad guy with 4 animals in 5 years, and I'm the problem. And they're the dairy 1,000 feet away from me, and I'm the problem. The stockpile of manure on my property is manure that he brought in. But he doesn't want to tell you that. And I'd be here the rest of the day with more information just like this to counter these beautiful stories, white puffy cloud stories that they're telling, making themselves look good. What about the holding pit where they dumped all that water years ago, which contributed, in my opinion, to the contamination of the groundwater? He didn't talk about that. At least if he did, and anything I'm missing here, I missed it. I'm sorry. With room for error. But painting themselves as some, they haven't done anything. And I have documents right here today. Currently, this year, Jan Zimmerman says Hinckley Dairy contaminated the groundwater. Black and white. But I haven't been hearing that. And I'm not going to give no, and I'm not qualified to speak to you as a professional. You guys are supposed to know this stuff. John Morales and his crew are supposed to know this stuff, and I'm looking to them, and even though they weren't around 15 years ago, 10 years ago, but the personnel that were totally dropped the ball, or we wouldn't be standing here in front of you today. 15 years this has been going on, and longer, because Jay Cass, who was involved years ago, who now is retired, told me that Lahontan Water Board put Hector Hirata Green Valley Farms on hold. That was 10 years ago. So that's deliberate. The government put him on hold, and no one will answer my question why. And if they've answered it, I missed it. And I'm so frustrated and stressed out over this, that I don't deserve this. And I'm looking to, and I don't even know what your function is, the board I'm standing in front of. I'm under the impression you're supposed to police the people under you. And if this is how I see it, and I could be wrong, if that's going on, I'm missing it. And I'm a key player. And Lisa Dernbach, 15 years ago, who was kind of outspoken, I think she was stationed out of the Tahoe department, said that because I came into the picture getting educated on nitrates, when the whole subject in my world was what PG&E has done with chromium 6, she brings up nitrates, and the order that went out from the Lahontan Water Board, the cleanup abatement order, 2011, and it was started 2 years prior to that, according to Jay Cass, And the records show it. Ken DeVries had those records up there. Lahontan Water Board gave Hinckley Dairy the cleanup abatement order in 2011, and nothing was done for 4 or 5 years. And the evidence was put in front of you. There's my wells, and I knew nothing about it. And the dairy was ordered to inform all neighbors in the designated area of what was going on. Hinckley Dairy chose to ignore that, and Lahontan Water Board wasn't policing Hinckley Dairy. So it went on for years, and I'm a victim. I didn't know anything about it, but the key players that caused the problem and are supposed to take care of the problem, which is the government, did nothing. No penalties, no fines, no reprimands that I'm familiar with for all these years. And if somebody gave me that answer, I'm not aware of it. Or it's not in verbiage that I understand. And I'm very frustrated, and the stress and strain that's put on me is, I guess legal terms, is pain and suffering, and I should not be put through this. And Lauren puts it nicely. We want to do, let's do something. If am I wrong? This is a question for everyone. Am I wrong to listen to the government? Is the government misleading me? Because if that's it, let's hear it. Speak up. I'm so frustrated that I don't have a stroke because of this. And I got Hinckley Dairy and other people. They're smiling. They're happy. And I'm sick inside with stress and strain. And I'm being poisoned with nitrates. And I've been told by Lisa Dernbach, who works for Lahontan Water Board, who did, that nitrates is worse than the chromium 6, and it's being handled, in my opinion, like whoop-de-doo, no big deal. Finger-pointing going on when Jan Zimmerman, in her own words, is Hinckley Dairy polluted the groundwater. I got it right here if you want to see it. And that's just one bit of information of many that I am not geared up to be prepared like Morales was, and Ken DeVries. I feel like I'm being discriminated against. I didn't know anything about it, how I could be prepared. I'd blow your mind with what's been going on behind the scenes if I had the opportunity to. And the arrogance and snooty, snotty attitude of Lahontan Water Board personnel get with me when they're in their own little realm in their office or at public meetings, and me being threatened with being kicked out of the office or the meeting for disrespecting. Because if that's the case, I'm right here disrespecting everybody involved. And I don't think I am. I'm so frustrated because no one's listening. And John tells a good story, but left out a whole bunch. Ken tells a beautiful story, but left out a whole bunch that make them look bad. And I need to, and every time I gotta come up here, I'm gonna be a little bit more prepared, and I'm frustrated. And if none of this, what I had to say here today, is gonna have any effect, then what's the use of telling you more? Because there's a lot more. And please, this board, if you have any authority over the personnel under you, don't make any hasty decisions today or tomorrow. Give Lauren Pitts and myself a chance to tell what's really going on that has not been transparent with Lauren Pitts and family and myself. And if I'm wrong, which I know I'm not, you'll never hear another word out of me. So.
Okay. Thanks, Brent. I think the 10 minutes is about...
It will never be enough time.
Understand.
10 minutes.
Understand.
And before I go, can you tell me in the world what your function is, this board?
Let me get on to other speakers. We'll get to that. So our board's
function. Will that be today?
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Jeff.
All right. Thank you, Brent. I do not have any other speaker cards, no other Zoom, no other?
No.
Okay. So with that, we will close the the formal public hearing, it's not a public hearing, I guess, but the public discussion component. And what I'd like to suggest is that first we, as board members, maybe ask our staff, possibly speakers, but more likely staff, any kind of clarifying questions rather than just sort of jump into deliberation, because there may be some data points here that are in dispute and conversational. So, Board Member Cox, you are ready to ask some questions?
Okay,
go for it.
Thank you. I appreciate all the speakers and staff's presentation. This has been a very informative conversation, and it is just that for the Water Board to gain more information on this situation. Mr. Chair, I did have a couple of questions for the speakers. Do you want me to ask those now or wait until the board asks their questions of staff?
Why don't we go with staff first, and then we'll come back to that.
I feel staff did a very thorough presentation. I just have a couple of questions for Mr. Pitts. And I would like to point out that, you know, Mojave Water Agency has extensive groundwater monitoring wells throughout the service area. And the wells that we have in the Hinckley area show nitrate levels from 0 to 20 and TDS from 200 to 700. I also know PG&E collects a myriad of data. Perhaps if we start putting all of those data sets on a map, it may start painting a picture that some of this is naturally occurring, that there are other potential contributors that the Water Board hasn't looked at yet at this point. So I'll wait and ask Mr. Pitts my couple of questions when you're ready.
Okay. Board Member Pierce, questions for staff? Board Member Devers, questions for staff? I just have a couple, and I think I'm going to put our executive director and our esteemed counsel on the spot on that. Because I will probably get it wrong, maybe Elizabeth, what is the board's function? How is it technically described? And if you need a minute to look it up so it's exact, because I think we all have our version, but I want to make sure that Brent hears it correctly. You're welcome to take some time. I've got another question for Ben if you want to wait a minute. You want to do that? Okay. Question for Ben. So, and maybe it also goes to Alonzo some, but so they talked about this Green Valley Farms. Others called it Huerta. Explain to me the sort of the non-permitting or the permitting or sort of what's the deal with that one?
Yeah, that great question. So, you know, the decision to not permit or permit long ago, which was described as, you know, before my time, before Jan's time, and not to make that an excuse, but really focusing on sort of what has been going on in the last 4 to 5 years, we, you know, developed a dairy strategy, which the board is familiar with. We've presented that to you a couple times, and we've actually brought at least one individual permit to the board for consideration, and we plan on bringing others. Well, Hector Huerta, facility's name? Green. What's the name of the facility?
Green Valley.
Sorry. Is on that list in terms of developing individual WDRs. What I will tell you in addition to that is that we've already approached Mr. Huerta about our intent to issue him a 13267 order, which is an investigative order, which would require putting in monitoring wells, essentially. And that does two things. It gives us more immediately some groundwater data to be able to start to assess the amount of loading of nitrate and TDS that's going to groundwater. It'll also help us determine better perhaps what groundwater flow direction is, which Alonzo mentioned earlier is a bit in question. And it would eventually be a requirement of a WDR to have monitoring wells anyway, right, as part of the sampling plan. So that's all in the works. Mr. Huerta has been approached. He knows it's coming. And I think it'll really help shed a lot of light on the extent to which his operation is contributing to the groundwater issue there.
Thank you, Ben. And Elizabeth, again, sorry for putting you on the spot here. But
sorry. Thanks for letting me take a moment because it is such a big question. I didn't want to be unclear. So the Lahontan Water Board is the primary responsible for the protection of water quality in the region. And our region encompasses the Oregon border down the Eastern Sierra all the way to the desert where we are today. And in the context of this item, what the board has done and can do is issue cleanup and abatement orders requiring dischargers in the area to clean up or abate the effects of waste from their discharges. So the board in the 2010s used that authority to issue a cleanup and abatement order for the Hinckley Dairy. The board that you see in front of you can review the implementation of that cleanup and abatement order, work with staff to give direction on how, improvements to that implementation, as well as, recommending and considering amendments to that CAO, rescission of that CAO, or issuing other cleanup and abatement orders to other discharges in the area. You also heard today the possibility of issuing waste discharge requirements. So that's another arm of what the board does in terms of issuing permits to currently operating facilities, including dairies or other confined facility operations in the area. The board can also take enforcement actions for non-compliance with any of those existing orders. So the work that the board does is varied. We never have seven, but it's a seven board member decision-making body that's appointed by the governor. And I think that might be it.
Thanks.
For
that's,
me.
No, that's
if you guys
great.
Have additional questions, I can.
No, I appreciate that. I would have gotten through the first sentence probably accurately. After that, I would have stumbled a bit. All right. Any other questions for staff before we go?
Well, I actually had one. I mean, what is the process for rescission of a CAO? They put in, if we get to the point of a whole house system being installed, which seems like a very gracious solution here, how does that process look? And I'll.
So I could take that one. So there's several avenues for rescission. One is that levels are reduced to a point where replacement water is no longer needed. If that's the case, then the board could determine that no further action is required under cleanup abatement order and either issue a no further action letter or a rescission, which in essence accomplishes the same thing. There could be another opportunity for rescission, including that maybe evidence indicates that they are no longer a source or were never a source, but that would require additional evidence that to be presented to the board. Otherwise, an agreement to rescind might be difficult to justify just because a certain water replacement technology is chosen. We'd have to ensure that that is consistent with Water Code Section 13304 and some of our other policies regarding cleanup. So we can continue to investigate that, but it might be a difficult option for the board to take within our authorities.
What about amending as opposed to rescinding, amending a CAO?
Like with any action in front of the board, an amendment would be need to be based on and supported by the evidence, but there's various ways to amend a CAO, including what you heard today in terms of changing the monitoring frequency or making other changes. So that would entail drafting and presentation of that order to either the board or the executive officer as the board's designee.
What if new evidence, is put on the table, like the Huerta property, if they've got 500 cattle there, as Mr. Pitt shared with us today, that is a significant operation. And it doesn't, if it's in a feedlot situation, there's no washing or treating or separating that water. It is just going directly into, you know, their urine is going directly into the groundwater. And that seems, to me, at least at this point, that seems like a bigger issue than a now defunct dairy operation.
So there are two ways to address possible additional sources. One is what staff mentioned in terms of issuance of a waste discharge requirements for ongoing operations. Through that, there could be lead to best management practices and other changes at the facility that would reduce impacts of any discharges. The other possibility, if the evidence supported it, is to issue a cleanup and abatement order to additional sources.
Okay. Because with the groundwater flowing to the northwest, that would actually take the former dairy's water flow away from the subject properties. I mean, it appears that perhaps we just, in the past, looked at what may be the most evident contributor, and that's where we base the CAO. I know the staff that worked on it then are no longer with the water board, so it's hard to conjecture how this determination was arrived at, but now we have greater knowledge, particularly because of the work that PG&E has done and that the water board has done in that area. We know the groundwater is not flowing from the dairy to the subject properties on the east because the groundwater is flowing to the north and the west. So how do we address what potentially could have been, maybe misjudgments or the best judgments based upon the data at the time, but now we have new evidence that perhaps should bring us to a point of reconsideration of an issue?
It's always within the board's prerogative when new evidence is presented to reconsider or amend an order. My understanding is that we are still looking into whether or not the groundwater direction would indicate additional sources. So that's part of staff's ongoing work.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
And you've got some questions for Mr. Pitts. Is that the?
I did. It's okay.
All right. Go ahead, Rick. No good. Then we'll
Ben,
call
I have a question for you. Is the Hinckley Dairy in complete compliance with the CAO at this time?
As far as I'm aware, I actually would probably defer to John or Reggie Alonzo. I know that there have been some little things that have come up in terms of providing the continuous replacement water that we've had to contact the dairy and rectify and stuff, but I'll leave it to them for a full response.
Hey, this is Reggie again. The Hinckley Dairy CAO has a couple requirements. One is to submit regularly monitoring reports to us. It's still once every 9 months, a complete monitoring report of the sampling of the residential wells. And the second requirement is to provide replacement water to the residents. And as far as I am aware, John, you can correct me if I'm wrong, they have been providing replacement water to the residents on time, as my understanding. And they have been submitting reports to us on time. Though last year there was a report that was missing a QAQC from the report, and the water board, we wrote them an NOV for insufficient report that was submitted.
That sounds like a lab error to me. John, do you have anything to say?
I guess in support of what Reggie's saying, there has been complaints in the past, not many, from residents that have not received their water on time. That's probably because the water company providing the bottled water, I think they have issues with their routing and things like that. but nothing intentional as far as I know.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Fisk, would you be willing to come back to the microphone? Because I think Board Member Cox has a question or two for you, and that way it gets recorded.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much for coming back to the podium. You've been on the property for 11 years now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you stated that when you moved in, your nitrate level was 75 and your TDS was 800?
Yes, ma'am. So I do have from Geo. It's the one that Ken said that he couldn't read very well. But I do have that chart right here of all the wells and of all of them if you want to see it.
Can we receive that information?
You'll need to leave that with Ariel, though, so that we can make sure that it's disseminated with all the board members and then shared online.
Okay.
Do you have a copy?
I can't read it there.
Yeah, I can't read it.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Thank you. And do you feel that the Hortas property is contributing to the nitrates?
Okay, so I'm gonna dispute the water flow. I deal a lot with the well companies. I know a lot of them. So the water, the way that it flows, they're saying it's northwest. It is not, because of the way the river flows. It actually flows, I would say, southeast. Because if you're looking at the river through Barstow, it curves right where we're at. It curves around. According to Eagle Well Drilling, Randy Wallace, and a couple other ones, because I talked about having another well drill trying to get past the nitrates. Mm-hmm. They told me the direction of the water that they have been drilling, especially Wallace well drilling, since the 70s. And he said the water comes at an angle and it actually cuts across. Now, the only way to really know that is you would have to put in monitoring wells or wells for testing the water depth of how it flows. But according to the well companies, they say that that's the way that it flows. It actually flows. So my property's here, so it actually flows at an angle this way. Like I said, it's the only real way is to put in some wells and test wells to find out exactly which way, upgrading, downgrading. According to a thing that was dated that this had been done back in 2010, and that is how they acquired that Hinckley Dairy was the contributor. And that's straight from your staff. So, and then the other thing, I have one other thing. John, I'm not trying to step on your toes, but the issue that we had, and I think that's why John and them came out, is back last June, Hinckley's Dairy's guy came to test the water, and his dates were saying that he tested the water 3 days before he came to my house, and I made that complaint. So that's as far as I know. That's why John and M are testing water right now. So,
well, thank you for bringing that to our attention, and I think I would challenge the anecdotal information from the well drillers, because PG&E has done such good work in that area.
Yeah, I'm sorry to step over you. PG&E water testing wells are about 3 miles from my house. Mm-hmm. So their water flow is a different direction. That is correct.
Okay.
It does come in off a different aquifer.
Sounds like we have a lot more work to do.
Yeah, may not solve this one with this.
Yeah, and that's also from what's the gentleman that did the analysis from the USGS? I can't say his last name.
John Isbicki.
Isbicki. Okay, if you look at his book, I have the book. If you look at it, actually where we're at, it shows an eddy of how the water circulates into that area.
Interesting.
So.
Thank you.
Is that all for Mr. Pitts?
That is all.
Thank you, Mr. Pitts, for coming back.
All right, thank
appreciate
you. And give this to Ariel?
Okay. Yeah, Ariel. All right, any other, we've already done the speakers. Board members, you have a question? He's coming back.
He's coming back.
All right. we're going to only entertain at this point board member questions. He's being asked a specific question by a board member, and he's going to come back and answer it, and then we're going to get on with our deliberations. I know, but everybody got 10 minutes. We're giving him extra only because board members have specific questions. If they have specific questions for you, Mr. Carforth, we will certainly ask them. Mr. Pitts,
I have a question.
Board Member Devers has a question.
So of the three strategies for replacement water, do you have your heart set on one?
I would like to have a treatment system, honestly.
On each wellhead?
I have actually one wellhead at my house. It does both of my residences.
Is it number one?
What's that?
Is it the well number one from the map?
Yes, it's well number one on the map. That is correct.
Are the other contaminated well owners willing to go with that treatment strategy?
That other one would be Brent. Brent has two of them that I know of. I think you guys have the other one. Am I correct, Ken? And I'm not for sure. I don't have my phone on me to look at the file.
Is the general consensus they'd like to have wellhead treatment?
I think the general consensus is they would want clean water, and I'm pretty sure that that's what they would go with. Like I said, I've looked at using the UV system other than using a salt-based system or an RO system. From what I understand, the UV system is probably one of the best out there, and I think that it actually lasts a little bit longer. And if you use a salt system, so I work out of Fort Irwin, I work with a lot of freshwater treatment guys, so I ask the questions all the time. So if you use a salt system, you have a couple different things. You can put it back into your septic tank, which is what we have, which you would have to pump it out every year because you're pumping the brine and all the excess residue into your tank. It's going to fill it up faster. So you would have to have it pumped out. The other thing is on that is the salt will eat through your septic tanks 10 times faster than anything else that's in there.
Yeah, it's got to be plastic for sure.
Yeah, or the other thing is you jump it out onto the ground. Now, we're not defeating anything. Now we're contaminating the water with other stuff. And then the other thing would be is if you were on a sewer system for, like, the city or whatever, you would dump it into that. But if we were on a sewer, we would have water, you know, and we wouldn't be at this point. So,
all right. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Pitt.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, board, there's a number of options that we've been looking around, wellhead treatment, Golden State Water, amending, changing CAOs. I am reminded, so it's up to us to kind of conjure up some ideas here, remembering we're not making decisions at this point because we can't. We don't have that in front of us, a specific decision, but we can give direction to staff to move forward with whatever. So, Board Member Cox, let you begin. And I'm going to kind of go down the line so everybody gets a shot here.
I think this has been a fairly enlightening conversation, and I think I would like to see where staff can take it from here as far as finding a solution, possible, you know, whole house system, rescission of the CAO or whatever best meets the, you know, the satisfaction. But I am very, very concerned that the dairy is not the only contaminator. And, you know, morally, I would have a hard time pinning the responsibility on just one entity when there is another significant operation that has been there and water boards had previous interaction with them in the past that I think we need to circle the wagons on this. And I think staff is better suited to bring us back options.
Board Member Pierce.
Just my thoughts.
Thank you. Board Member Pierce, thoughts?
I agree wholeheartedly with what Kimberly said, and I think we need to look at some way to put an end to this for both the dairy and the land residents. I mean, there's a lot of unanswered questions to me, so the sooner we can do that, the better we're all going to be. So thank you.
Board Member Devers.
I definitely feel the homeowner's pain on this, and I think staff probably could step it up a little bit and try to figure it out, the groundwater and whatnot. That's it.
Yeah, my thoughts. I think I echo many of my colleagues' thoughts. I actually thought that one of the residents had some good quotes. I wrote them down. Let's sit down as grown adults. I like that idea. Let's figure this out, fix it. I like that idea, too. And we just want some clean water. I like that idea, too. So I think you put all those together, I think we're kind of looking in that direction. I think, though, the deity here is in the details, trying to kind of figure it out, because we know there are kind of legal issues. There's issues with rescission of CAOs. There's issues with timing. There's issues with money. We get all that, and those are important considerations. I share Board Member Cox's concern that it seems like the Green Valley Farms or Mr. Huerta's operation certainly does merit the investigation, and I appreciate, Ben, that you and the staff are moving on that. I think if we can move on that, that could be an important part of the solution. There could be some creative options or opportunities that I think we want to look at. And to me, when you sit down as grown adults, one of the things you get to do is come up with creative answers that may not be obvious. So maybe there's other ways of creating, you know, some value in some of the parcels or properties that might be available to be able to pay for some things. But it sounds like a solution is not that far off. It sounds like that Hinckley Dairy has expressed a willingness to look at the wellhead protection. I'll say wellhead protection. It's not quite correct, but the wellhead treatment options. It sounds like the two residents may be amenable to that, depending, of course, on details. What kind? Does it work? How long? What's the maintenance cycle, et cetera? But it doesn't sound like out of the question. It sounds like, though, to make that happen requires our board or our staff and then board to take a look at the CAO and possibly some amending or some changes from the dairy's perspective, if I'm understanding your what you told us in the last slide about steps forward. And there's clearly some big unknowns here. I mean, we still clearly are kind of not quite certain what's going on with the groundwater, and I get that. I mean, there's, you know, only so much monitoring you can do and only so much data we have. We go forward with what we've got. That's what we've got to do. Board Member Devers, I feel the residents' pain. I think I also maybe feel a little bit of the dairy as a resident and as a pain. But I think a mediated or conversational solution here is very possible. So I can try to fashion something of a statement, and we can turn it into a motion. I'm not quite sure what, since we don't have an official motion, yeah. Or we don't take a vote even. You're just getting stuff from us.
Do you mind, Chair, if Assistant Executive Officer Jan Zimmerman and I ask some clarifying questions and maybe
please
circle back on slide 11, AGP, which would be the options.
Please. Yes, clarifying what we all just said is probably useful.
I'll let Jan go first.
Thank you, Jan Zimmerman, Assistant Executive Officer. Thank you for the direction, Board. I'd like to ask, what's your expectation? So you saw our slide on what we've done in the last 2 years. There's quite a few actions almost on a monthly basis that we've done something, investigated, evaluated. What is your expectation for us to reach that solution? Everything takes time. There's a lot of moving parts, and just, you know, sharing the expectation with the residents and the dairy, that it's not an immediate solution, but is going to take that creative collaboration.
Well, let me take a shot at it, and you guys. So yes, number one, I think creative collaboration, and you've been doing it. So I mean, I'm not saying that somehow it hasn't been happening, but it needs to happen quicker. And honestly, the next time I see this, I'd like to see something that we could vote on. And I don't quite know what that would look like. I think we're gonna, maybe we'll get a little closer to that in a minute here, but you'll figure that out. But it could look like an amended CAO that includes the wellhead protection for residents. It could sound something like that, with some timelines and some assurances and some maintenance periods and, you know, the kinds of things that were advanced by the dairy, but also I think at least in part acknowledged by the residents to have some value. So that's where I would like to see it. But what I wouldn't like to see, this is just personally coming from me, is to come back in a year and have the same conversation again. I think and if it takes a while, then it takes a while, and we can get some updates, right? And then at that point, maybe we know more about Green Valley Farms, whatever. So does that help? That's just me. That's coming from me strictly.
Thank you.
Okay, so it seems like the discussion so far has gravitated towards some sort of wellhead treatment or point-of-use treatment system. I heard Mr. Pitts being in favor of like a reverse osmosis system. So I bring that up because the possible strategies staff presented also included potentially looking into an extension connection with Golden State Water. We've been in conversation with Golden State and our SAFER program at State Board, but at this point, it would be helpful for us in terms of sort of narrowing the scope of our work. So what I'm hearing from the board and also the residents is that maybe we rule that one out, number three. I mean, we've heard from the residents that their opinions on that.
I'll take a shot. You guys correct me when I'm wrong, not if I'm wrong. Yes, I mean, I think for me the answer is that it seems like residents don't want it, and to me they're not mutually exclusive. I think you can work on item two here, basically. I think was what we're saying. It also includes though. Contemplating maybe some CAO, how that affects the CAO, but work on that. And at the same time, the long term could be Golden State, you know, years down the line. I mean, who knows what happens out here with other projects, development, you know, other things coming along, line extensions happen all the time. That could not be necessarily mutually exclusive. It could be 5 or 7 years with in situ, and then all of a sudden, Golden State's going to, you know, serve development project X, and there we go. So, yeah, so that's how I think of it.
Okay. And I also kind of heard us, the status quo is option one, and we all agree. I think that's not not supportable anymore. We've heard from the residents now for a long time.
Except in the short term to keep things going.
Correct. continuous. Yeah, that'll continue to happen. And I also just want to mention that the reduction in monitoring that we granted the dairy has been supplemented by our staff. So in other words, what wasn't previously being monitored by the dairy, now our staff are doing that monitoring. So we continue. We still have the continuous data set, still taking the same total number of samples. All right, I'm going to ask a question of my counsel here.
Well, I just on number two, I mean, we typically in CAOs don't determine means and methods. We just determine outcomes. Are we looking at state funding to possibly help with this? Do we have any set money that we can request to help with this? Because the big question out there is, there may be additional polluters that should share the cost in the solution, yet to be determined. So I would be challenged to, you know, have the dairy support the whole cost unless there are some assurances for them that at a date certain they would be relieved from the CAO and that this would solve their contribution to the solution. So how do we get there? I mean, the first thing is there external money that can be brought to the table for this? And the second one, if not, if the dairy is amenable to doing this, what assurances can we give them? I mean, obviously the dairy is defunct. Dairies go defunct because of economic considerations. So you're looking at an operation that is no longer making money and viable, yet we're burdening this upon them when it's not conclusive that they are the only contributor to this.
I'll look to Jan to help me out on this one. But in our recent discussions with the SAFER program, we have been kicking around the idea of not only getting some technical assistance money to do some engineering reporting on a system that would be best suited here as a point use or wellhead, but also potentially some funding for that. And, you know, this was without making any promises or commitments. They're just preliminary discussions that we're having with the deputy director at SAFER. They're interested in sort of expanding the scope of some of the money they may be able to put towards these types of issues because it's not unique to the desert or around the state. And so it'd be a bit of a pilot, but we're willing to push the leading edge and the envelope there to see if it couldn't offset the cost, for example, of a insulation of a wellhead treatment. At the same time, they've been pretty clear with us that the dairy, as the responsible party, would, you know, have to, you know, pay up some of the cost. And then in terms of assurance, I think once a system like that was installed, then that system would be providing continuous replacement water to the residents. So the dairy would no longer bear the burden of bottled water cost, you know, having perhaps paid some of that upfront cost for the insulation. When it comes to, like, the maintenance of a system, that's where it becomes a little unknown or sketchier, perhaps. I don't know that we've really leaned too far into that part of the conversation yet, but Jan, I don't know if you have anything to add.
I don't have anything to add. Other than we are going to continue our conversations with SAFER, and it was promising that they are looking to understand more about individual well owners and how they can pilot, you know, certain treatment systems like this.
You were going to pose a question.
Yeah. And I know Tracy... I don't have the last name with me right now, is online as well. But so I heard a couple of things today, Elizabeth, including some comments, you know, by Mr. Pitts, Mr. DeVries, and then the boards about, you know, sitting down and working through and being solution-oriented. And there's a comment about being adults, too, which is always a good reminder. And so what I want to know is, to what extent could the parties meet not with the water boards to resolve their differences through some sort of mediation? And if they came up with a solution that was a wellhead treatment, a point of use of some sort like that, then, and you know, they're all agreeable to that, how would that, you know, meet the needs of our cleanup and abatement order? Could they do that and then come back to us with their agreement? And if it met the intent of the cleanup and abatement order by providing clean and continuous replacement water, then you know, would that work for us essentially?
Thank you, Ben. So yes, the residents and the dairy can always mediate on their own and come to a solution that they find acceptable and present that to the board. The issue will always be whether or not that solution actually constitutes uninterrupted water service. So if there is an end date to the operation and maintenance and there still is contamination in the water body, that might present difficulties for the board to rescind a CAO or provide some sort of assurance of an endpoint. I think that cooperation and a solution among the parties is a good one, and a good to have, as Chair Luck said, creative solutions come before the board, and we can consider that when it's presented to the board.
Okay, so, and then sort of in the while that in theory was going on, we could continue to evaluate water quality data, flow direction, look into permitting at Hector Huerta's facility, and if the concentrations in the groundwater were to go down to a certain point, then we could contemplate a rescission to the CAO. I guess that was more of a statement than a question.
Yeah, and I would just offer this as a, maybe the term is cautionary tale, having done some mediation work in the past. Sometimes negotiations can go on for a long time because one of the parties or several of the parties at interest, it is to their benefit that it simply goes on for a long time. Without the bit of pressure that the CAO essentially places on this, and without a time frame, I would be concerned about just saying go off, negotiate, bring something back. So I don't know if we can't specify, obviously, a time frame. I'm just kind of looking out at the parties. But anyway, that's just a cautionary tale because I've certainly seen it happen.
I'm going to go back to the Assistant Executive Officer. Jan, do you feel like we have what we need in terms of direction from the board?
Yes. We're going to continue our conversation. Well, do you need me to restate that? Okay. I think we got it, right, team? Give me a thumbs up. Okay. Thank you.
Back to you, Chair.
All right, thank you. And I'm just going to reiterate, I hope this works. I wish you all good office in making it work. And I'm just going to reiterate again my own personal or view as one board member, which is I really don't want the can kicked, up the hill again and back Sisyphus style back in our lap with exactly the same conversation. I think you guys get that, and I think you guys get that. You don't want that, I don't think. You want a solution. It sounds like we've got one. It just may take a little while to get to the details. So thanks. I'm going to recommend here we take about a 10-minute break, a little bio break, but we don't break for lunch, and we go ahead and do the last item. Everybody can power through. Mr. Devers, are you okay with that? All right, so 10-minute break. We come back, and we go into our last items. Thanks so much, everybody. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your hard work and testimony. Thanks, staff.
Here's your lunch.
We've got two. Thank you. Okay, here we go. The Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board is back in session. Folks, could we kind of get the room back? Everybody? We're back. Yeah, we're back in. We've got two items. Item 12 is the Air Force base and other base items, and then we've got the board member request for future agenda items, a quick one at the end. So item 12, former George Air Force Base, Victorville Department of Defense Environmental Restoration Program overview, and I don't know if that's who's coming. Okay, here we go. Beautiful. Great. Let's have a staff presentation, then we'll move on.
All right. Good afternoon, board chair, members of the board, and meeting attendees. My name is Molina Hov. I'm an engineering geologist out of the Department of Defense Site Cleanup Unit in the Victorville office. I am one of the remedial project managers working on the former George Air Force Base Department of Defense Environmental Restoration Program. And this is an informational item. No board action is required. However, board members may provide direction to the staff. Next slide, please. This presentation is the second in a series of informational items covering the 8 Department of Defense sites in the Lahontan region. The first informational item in the series was presented at the November 2025 board meeting on Marine Corps Logistics Base Barstow. Today, I will be providing an overview of the former George Air Force Base in Victorville. This presentation will cover the installation's military history, its current use, and a summary of the environmental cleanup efforts to date. On the Zoom platform, we also have representatives from the Air Force, Joe Reyna, Ana Nieves, and Don Gunstall, Air Force representatives for the environmental cleanup at former George Air Force Base. And in the room with us today, we also have Calvin Cox, Air Force contractor back there, and Sharissa Singh and John Hopkins with EPA over here. And they're also available for any questions about the presentation at the end of our presentation here. Next slide. From 1941 to 1945, the facility operated as Victorville Army Airfield, serving as an advanced flying school during World War II. After the war, it was placed on standby. And then from 1950 to 1992, it operated as George Air Force Base, a training base that housed F-4 Phantom fighters. And the background photo shows one of those F-4 Phantoms now displayed near the former base, which is currently Southern California Logistics Airport. The base closed in 1992 under the Department of Defense Base Realignment and Closure Process, and environmental cleanup began due to contamination from military activities. In 1990, the U.S. EPA added former George Air Force Base to the National Priorities List. The list ranks hazardous waste sites under CERCLA, the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act, also known as Superfund. Also in 1990, a federal facilities agreement was signed by the Air Force, U.S. EPA, California Department of Toxic Substance Control, and the Lahontan Water Board to coordinate cleanup activities. Next slide. So current use, this map here provides an overview of the current land use at former George Air Force Base and the nearby cities and facilities. The base boundary is shown in gray. The former base is bordered by Adelanto, Victorville, and Oro Grande. The map also shows the Adelanto Wastewater Treatment Plant, Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority, Adelanto Water Supply Wells, and the Mojave River. In 1994, Southern California Logistics Airport and the city of Victorville began operations at the site. Today, the area includes airport-related tenants, as well as the High Desert Power Plant, a federal prison, a public charter school, and various commercial and industrial businesses. Next slide, please. For cleanup management purposes, George Air Force Base is divided into sites. Some sites are grouped into operable units, or OUs. OU1 addresses TCE. OU2 previously consisted of petroleum sites, and for management purposes, all of the petroleum sites were shifted out of the OU designation, and OU2 was administratively closed. OU3 addresses TCE and the former base landfills. OU4 previously consisted of soil-only sites, and after some of those sites were closed, the remaining sites were administratively moved to OU5, and then OU4 was administratively closed as well. OU5 addresses soil-only sites, and then military munitions restoration program sites address the former munitions area. Petroleum sites address areas with petroleum hydrocarbons, which include jet fuel, and dieldrin sites address the sites with dieldrin, which was a common pesticide used in the 1950s to the 1970s. The next slide will provide an overview figure of the various contaminants referenced here. So next slide, please. This map here illustrates the groundwater and soil contaminants by color. So for groundwater, TCE is green, and it's located in the northeast and central portions of the base.
benzene is in pink. They're kind of small blobs there on the map, but you can kind of see located in the central portion of the base as well. Jet fuel free product is in blue, also located in that central portion of the base area. As you can see, it kind of correlates to the flight line, also the former flight line when the base was active. Dieldrin is in purple, and it's located in the former housing areas and former golf course. So these are locations where pesticides were historically applied when the base was active as well. So PFAS investigations are also currently in progress, and they're not shown on this map, but it's a base-wide investigation. It will be occurring for this site. And for soil, OU3 soil sites are in gray, and then OU5 soil sites are light pink. And when we're talking about the contaminants here, we just wanted to also make a point that some contaminants are managed differently. So TCE is considered a contaminant where the cleanup follows the Federal Facilities Agreement and requires EPA, DTSC, and Lahontan Water Board oversight, whereas benzene, free product, and dieldrin are managed by the Lahontan Water Board as the lead agency. And then with the potential for some of these remedies to affect each other, open communication occurs between the Air Force, EPA, DTC, and the Water Board to address the base-wide contamination. And then we'll go into a little bit more detail later in the presentation as well about some of the issues that challenges that we face with working with these different contaminants and how they interact as well. And also for another reference on this slide, I did want to point out that to the eastern side, you could kind of see this pink squiggly dotted line, and that shows the approximate extent of the perched upper aquifer and where that upper aquifer and the lower aquifer meet. And we're going to go into a little bit more about that geology too in a later slide. So next slide, please. Remedial activities to date. So to date, the Air Force has performed a wide range of remedial activities. These efforts have included jet fuel free product recovery, groundwater extraction and treatment, groundwater in situ plume stop, natural attenuation, soil excavation, soil vapor extraction, and condensate and groundwater PFAS pretreatment. Water from soil vapor extraction systems, condensate, and groundwater monitoring is routed through an on-base PFAS treatment system before off-site disposal. An off-base PFAS point of entry system for a private residential supply well was also installed. Next slide, please. So records of decisions and corrective action plans. This table here summarizes some of these selected remedies for the different operable units that we discussed a few slides earlier. So remedies are documented in record of decision documents for operable units, and then corrective action plans are for petroleum and dieldrin sites. So OU1, OU3, and parts of OU5 have record of decision documents. For OU1, the site CG7D groundwater extraction and treatment system is currently not operating, but a groundwater in situ plume stop study is ongoing for this site. For OU3, the FT9A remedy was converted from bioventing to SVE, and the FT19 CSV system is operational. The OT69 selected remedy is natural attenuation. For the petroleum and dieldrin sites, corrective action plans are in progress. Next slide, please. So up to this point, I've discussed the cleanup framework and the contaminants involved and the remedies selected for the different operable units. Now I'd like to discuss some of the challenges that influence how cleanup progresses at former George Air Force Base. Cleanup at the site faces several ongoing challenges, including complex hydrogeology, frequent changes in groundwater elevations and flow patterns, commingled plumes, communication and collaboration, federal funding constraints, and statewide administrative disputes. The next several slides will discuss each of these items in further detail. Next slide, please. This is an Air Force environmental sequence stratigraphy cross-section that highlights elevation changes and lithology across the northeastern part of former George Air Force Base and across the Mojave River to Oro Grande. The red line on the map in the upper corner there shows the location the cross-section is taken from. And so there are a few key takeaways from this figure here. And we'll spend some time on this because there's a lot to look at here. But the base itself sits about 200 feet higher than the Mojave River. So the Mojave River flows towards the north. And the northern part of the base is about 100 feet lower than the southern part. There are three different aquifers within the vicinity of former George Air Force Base. So there's the upper aquifer located there, and then the lower aquifer and the floodplain aquifer. That's labeled on the figure. You may recall one of the previous slides, I had pointed out that pink squiggly line on the figure, and then that kind of highlighted the location between the upper and the lower aquifer. So now we're kind of getting a cross-section view of that figure that we looked at earlier of the perched upper aquifer, which ends with the grade change here. And the colors on this slide also represent the different sediments, like the gravels, the sands, the silts, and the clays. And these layers were deposited from prehistoric rivers and lakes. I also wanted to point out that on this figure here, kind of to the left, you could see that there are earthquake faults, and the fault on this figure is shown as a diagonal dashed line on the left that cuts through all the layers. And because these layers, they all vary in permeability and composition, and then water flows laterally and vertically through the layers in different directions at different rates, these are kind of all things we have to take into consideration when we're talking about remediation at former George Air Force Base and considering, you know, remedial technologies and any of those applications. So next slide, please. As noted earlier in the presentation, former George Air Force Base is surrounded by multiple neighboring communities and facilities, and all these influence how groundwater moves in the area. So groundwater elevations and flow directions change frequently across this region, which affect plume movement because contaminants in the groundwater will move with groundwater flow. After the base closed, irrigation and golf course watering stopped, and as a result, groundwater levels in the housing area and golf course decreased. And then when the OU-1 groundwater extraction and treatment system operated, the Air Force changed the discharge location several times from the arroyo to the on-base sewage ponds and then to percolation ponds near the northeast end of the runway. Each of these discharge points temporarily created groundwater mounds that eventually disappeared once the discharges stopped. Off base, both the Adelanto Wastewater Treatment Plant and Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority discharged treated water into percolation ponds and into the Mojave River. These discharges also create localized groundwater mounds near the former base. Between the base and the river, we did also want to point out that the city of Adelanto operates its water supply wells. The regional water master has also documented broader groundwater elevation changes in off-base monitoring wells, showing that the entire area is dynamic and not just the groundwater flow on the base itself. Next slide, please. So these figures illustrate the groundwater flow directions and gradients in the perched upper aquifer and lower aquifer. So the thin blue lines show groundwater elevation contours, and the closer the contour lines, the steeper the gradient is for groundwater flow. Again, the arrows show kind of groundwater flow directions, and in general, the upper aquifer will move towards the Mojave River, and the lower aquifer flows away from the Mojave River. In the upper aquifer figure southeast, you can see some of the mounds from the former housing and former golf course area. So in the upper aquifer figure, there's some of those shorter arrows. You can kind of see those mounds there in that figure. And then in the lower aquifer figure northeast, you can see the radial flow from the VVWRA. So VVWRA discharges to the Mojave River and infiltration ponds, which are located within the vicinity of former George Air Force Base as well. Next slide, please. This figure shows some of the commingled contaminants, including TCE, benzene, free product, and dieldrin near the flight line, former housing, and former golf course areas. These contaminants are all chemically different, and they behave differently in groundwater. For example, TCE is denser than water and tends to sink in the groundwater, and then benzene and free product are less dense than water, and they'll float near the soil and groundwater interface. Next slide, please. Cleanup work involves collaboration among the Air Force, Environmental Protection Agency, Department of Toxic Substances Control, and the Lahontan Water Board. Together, these agencies make up the Base Realignment and Closure Cleanup Team, or BCT, which was established under the Federal Facilities Agreement. Munitions cleanup is also supported by the Army Corps of Engineers. And in recent years, we have also strengthened coordination with Southern California Logistics Airport, the cities of Victorville and Adelanto, Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority, and the Mojave Water Agency. Next slide, please. Cleanup work progress is affected by changes in federal budget and funding. So government shutdowns and shifting federal priorities can delay or redirect funding for cleanup work. There are also several ongoing informal disputes connected to broader disagreements between the state of California and Department of Defense at other bases. So these disputes involve the use of land use controls and how certain regulatory requirements are applied. Until these issues are resolved, some cleanup activities may be temporarily put on hold. Next slide, please. 5-year review. So every 5 years, the Air Force prepares a document to review remedies and determine whether a remedy is protective of human health and the environment. This table summarizes the most recent 5-year review, which summarized work between 2016 to 2020. The next 5-year review is due in 2026. And during this 5-year review, the Air Force will present all of the remedial work done and their protectiveness determinations. So this table outlines that. So for example, for OU1, you see that protectiveness was deferred, and then that reasoning is due to ongoing evaluation of remedy optimization for that plume stop study that I referenced earlier. So those protective statements include all of the details of the remedial work that happened during that 5-year review period, and it expands on that and supports the reasoning for why that protectiveness statement was made. Next slide, please. Current and upcoming work. So ongoing field activities include routine groundwater monitoring and remediation, site and remedial investigations, ongoing soil vapor extraction remediation, free product recovery. Site and remedial investigations include OU1 groundwater in situ remediation testing, which I referred to on the last slide as well. Separate PFAS investigations by the Air Force and the Southern California Logistics Airport Agency, and munitions work to identify and remove residual munitions and explosives of concern. Documents in progress include routine monitoring and remediation reports, corrective action plans, and the next 5-year review. Future documents include amendments to the records of decision for OU1 and OU3, and the intermediate documents, including remedial investigation, feasibility study, and proposed plan. This photo here also shows one of our monitoring well installations. This is located in our former munitions area, so we got to observe some of the field work out there. This just happened maybe a few months ago, actually. Next slide, please. PFAS investigation. So PFAS is a recent contaminant of concern. The Air Force identified PFAS sites based on historical use of aqueous film forming foam, which contained PFAS. On this map, those areas are shown in red. Investigation is in progress for the sites in green, which are the FT19 sites and FT20, as that also includes the CG70 plume, which is in the light green color. The FT sites are, they stand for former fire training areas. So back in the day, for the firefighter training activities, they would include like pumping solvents and waste oils and fuels, and then igniting the product and then extinguishing the fire with the AFFF, which contained the PFAS. And so those are those sites of concern that the Air Force will be investigating, and that investigation is in progress. And I believe some of the field work has also started for that effort. Next slide, please. Thank you for your time. That concludes my presentation.
Great, thank you. Great presentation, lots of good data, interesting. Turn back to board members. So I'll start to my left here. Board Member Devers, any questions or comments?
No questions. Excellent presentation.
Thank you.
Board Member Pierce.
No questions, and thanks for the presentation.
Oh, thanks.
And Board Member Cox.
Thank you. Could you go back two slides, please? Forward one. So you said the PFAS is outlined in red?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so in the red, so those are, so you see AFFF, like, for example, Area 5. Those were considered areas that there were potential for AFFF releases. So there are a few sites there on the whole figure, but for the current PFAS investigation that will be in process, or in progress, I mean, that will include the FT19 sites, which are in green, and FT20, and then that also includes the CG70 plume area, which kind of covers multiple of those AFFF areas. So it's like, if I can, it's like 7, 8, 9, 10.
Okay, so the red outline doesn't mean PFAS. That rectangle in the center, that's not a PFAS concentration area?
No, no, that's not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just site location, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When do you anticipate more information coming forward on the PFAS? Is that's something we're all learning about now.
Yeah, so more information from George Air Force Base in particular. Again, like I kind of mentioned, they're in the progress, like the beginning phases of their base-wide investigation for PFAS. So I think just a few weeks ago or last month, if I'm correct, Calvin, we started work on drilling wells out there in the areas of concern. So hopefully we'll be getting going out there and sampling soon within the next year or so, and then also getting more data on, you know, what the PFAS numbers look like in those areas of concern.
And is there a concern that the Deldrin plume will intercept with the river?
So for the Deldrin plume, let me back up. So the Mojave River, as you can see, is just to the east of the base. And, you know, we kind of talked about some of the groundwater, do you think AGP could go back to slide 10? 10? There you go. Okay, yeah, so if we're kind of looking at a bit, so the geology is there's the upper aquifer and the lower aquifer, so we kind of talked about how the upper aquifer flows north. It's like northeast to the river, and then the lower aquifer tends to move away from the river, let's say south, southwest-ish for the most part. It fluctuates throughout seasons and throughout the year. For the Deldrin plume in particular, based on the groundwater in the area, It's difficult to say about if we believe it could make its way to the river because, again, we're still looking at that interface, but where the upper aquifer and the lower aquifer meet. So we may see actually Deldrin moving like in that area and then going down into the lower aquifer is also a possibility. And then we are still trying to get a good understanding of, you know, the groundwater movement and trying to get work with the Air Force to get more information and details and more of a better conceptual site model of how the groundwater is moving in that area. But based on current data, we are not seeing it migrate that direction. I don't know.
And then I think my slide 8, records of decision and corrective action plans.
Yeah.
Just a statement. I know finances and coordinating with EPA and the BRAC team and all of that is a challenge, but natural attenuation is almost analogous to the do-nothing option, and I don't think it is the most protective of water quality, and if there's any way we can push past those barriers that are, you know, limiting direct and active treatment, I think we should see that. And I know we've got some folks from the EPA back there, so thank you for being here. But we need to look more at active remediation when and as possible, given the constraints. And I wish I had every word you said written down in a report. This was an exceptional presentation, Melina. Thank you.
Thank you.
I know Jan's sitting here beaming with pride. That was just a really good technical report that you condensed into, you know, some excellent points. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Board Member Cox. Other questions, comments? No? Right? Okay. Thanks so much, Melina. All right. Great item. Our last item is item 13, and it's board member requests for future agenda items or any other items of interest.
Excuse me, just want to check in of the speaker card since we had folks in the audience.
Oh,
I just wanted to double check that.
Sorry about that. Thank you for reminding. Did we get any speaker cards?
No, we did.
And
not
no Zoom participants?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, appreciate that check. Okay, item 13. Board member requests future agenda items or other items of interest. I have none at this point. I've looked at kind of what's coming up, and there's a few things, and there'll probably be a few more. None? Okay, that concludes it. Thank you, everyone, for your participation today, and we are officially adjourned.